Charlie, your life?
I've lived here all my life.
Okay, then, can we just start off with you telling me
a
little bit about what it was like then, the town and the people and the businesses, and how they've changed, and how you feel about the change and stuff like that?
Okay, I was born on Gold Street, or what was now called Gold Street, which is not too far from the present East Junior High School. And at that time, they were just right there where the East Junior High School was, just a bunch of old company houses. And what they finally did is, in about 1932, 1933, they tore all those down and built the high school right there. And that was a very tough time because there wasn't to build a school, because that was right at the start of the Depression. There wasn't very much money. But downtown was just basically the railroad run right through the town. And all the business was just on either side of the, basically on either side of the railroad. And they had a, right there where the underpass to the railroad is now, and I'm talking about the pedestrian underpass, the only way you could get across the railroad was they had a gate to go down, or the trains go down, they'd put the gates down like that, and then you raise them when the trains went through. Let's see, at that time, I think the Yellowstone School was built in 1922, and there wasn't hardly anything up where Yellowstone School is now, and there's one, Lincoln School was just a little old wooden shack up close to where, right behind Pete's Grocery now, or the one they call, it's Zurich's Grocery now. Well, there's Washington School was there, and then all the barracks that was used during the, were still all just, you know, used as barracks, but people were starting to live in them. That's where they housed the soldiers when they had the Chinese uprising, we understand. I, that was even before my time. The only other street was down Pilot Butte, that was going down that way. And there were a lot more bars than there were grocery stores or anything else. In fact, they had so many liquor dealers that even when they changed the allotment for awarding liquor licenses, Rock Springs had so many that were grandfathered that they didn't get one new one. And then, you know, in the last few years. Maybe you ask me some questions. And then maybe
okay, well, that's the kind of stuff that I want you to tell me about the businesses and stuff like that. Also, you went to school here?
Oh, yes, all my life.
Okay, then what were the schools like?
Well, they're not like the schools, I guess, basically, that you have now. You know, you have, well, I guess in a way they're alike, but, you know, you usually just had a principal and one school teacher for each grade, or there might have been Yellowstone, I think there were two of each. But, you know, they didn't have all the special teachers, music teachers, and all that. I mean, it was just one grade, one teacher, and when I was just a young person, well, this was about the time, you know, when there were still a lot of wagons and horses and things like that around town. And it was about that time, you know, when the first Fords, and in fact, my dad was one. But when he came out here in 1906, he'd been here probably 10 years and had one of those old Model Ts, you know. And anyway, the cars were just starting to come in, Model A's like that. I remember the first radio that came in, and I must have been 7 or 8 years old. That had been in 1927, 28, somewhere along that. One family had a radio, and one of those crazy little boxes, you know, had a great big ear on it, you know, and everybody go down and listen to it, especially on when the news were on, like 5 or 6 o'clock. I can't remember the time, it was in the evening. Everybody go down and listen to the news on a little old dumb looking radio. And I guess you talk about what kids did. I remember used to play hide and seek and kick the can out there right in front of our house was the lights, you know, when there was a street light. We'd go out there and play kick the can and hide and seek and one thing around that during the night and the evening. There wasn't as much, running around in cars and all that stuff then. Well, you didn't have any.
Did neighbors get together more and stuff like that?
I think they did. You know, they did. Well, you didn't have TV, you didn't have radio, so they got together and played cards and those business, you know, these sort of things.
What was the would you say were differences between the people then and how people are nowadays here?
Well, they live a lot faster life now, you know, because of the way the country's developed in just those years. I think you just talked about just a little bit, and that is all these people visited more, and relatives came to visit more often, and played a lot more cards, and you know, now everything, I don't have to tell you what the day is, it's just the fast whirlwind all the time. It's everybody has a car, and they don't stay around home, they go use the dragon. I mean, all, it was all dirt streets in those days, there wasn't any, there weren't even sidewalks.
Well,
there really wasn't, you know, that much to do. The thing you do, you go to school, if you had any schoolwork to do, you spend the evening doing that most of the time, as I think about it. They were very tough times, and people just didn't have any money, and I found out, you know, the Depression started in 29, that was the very start of it, but it lasted, you know, for 7 or 8 years, and people just didn't have extra money. When I was freshman in high school, I started working down at a Safeway store, and I made 75 cents a week. I'd go down and work 2 or 3 hours after school every night and on Saturdays, and pretty soon by the end of the year, I was making $5 a week. That's how tough times were. I mean, it was just really, really tough. I mean, you just didn't have, your folks didn't have anything, and the food was more like soups and stews and beans and things like that, because people just didn't have money to buy steaks and, you know, all the frill things you have now.
How much did steak and stuff like that cost?
Oh, we've seen some papers, you know, or something like that, but, you know, ridiculously low, you know, like, well, maybe a T-bone would cost 30 cents a pound, but you'd be able to get the other ones for five, 10 cents a pound. A lot of times they'd give you the darn old bones for soup bones and stuff like that, because, well, it was really bad, you know. It was very, I guess, kind of a poor time in our life. And it kind of, you know, it makes just being in that, growing up in that period makes you very conservative now. You know, you really don't waste much money anymore.
Was there a lot of kids that were in high school and stuff like you that also worked while they were in school?
No, you bet. I think anybody that could find a job, sure, would try to get one and try to do it.
Mm-hmm. What kind of places hired the high school kids?
Well, you know, you didn't have at that time, didn't have the child labor laws that you have now. And so you'd work in grocery stores or, you know, Woolworths and places like that. They still shoed horses and things like that. There were probably a lot more jobs now than there was then. I mean, it was just because there are more things, more different businesses now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, getting back to the families, do you think that the families when you were a kid and stuff were closer knit than like they are now, or anything like that?
Well, I think they are, because they had to be. You know, that unless they played with the brothers and sisters, they couldn't play with anybody else. I mean, you know, generally, we lived on the ranch most of the summers. We had a ranch out north, and we lived on the ranch most of the time. And so if you didn't play with your brothers and sisters, you didn't get to play with yourself, I guess, about what you wanted to do. Nobody else to play with.
Uh-huh. So was there bigger families then?
Oh, you bet. See, there was in my family, my mother had 6 children. Now, we have 5 in our family, but you know, now everybody just has maybe 1 or 2.
I have some specific questions here about family life and stuff that I'd like to ask you. Like, where did your families have their meals? Did the families sit down for every meal together? And well, was it kind of like a policy to eat meals together as a whole family?
But generally, in our family, it was. But now, my wife's family, she's from Oregon, And her folks had a store down, you know, a little confectionery store. So what happened was that somebody would watch the store and then come home and eat. So in their particular business, this wasn't true. They never hardly ever set up. Maybe Sunday afternoon or something like that they'd set up. But in our family, where I basically all sat down at one time, and then us kids had to get up and do the dishes, wash and wipe the dishes, and there wasn't any dishwasher or anything. You had to do, and physically do it. Mm-hmm.
Did you have guests for dinner a lot, or was it
usually just... Oh, not really, not too much.
Okay, now I'll get back to the family again. How did the family spend holidays and things like that?
Well, they got together with the families a lot more than they do now. You know, at that time when I had an aunt, or cut several aunts, and what they do, they just they trade off. One time everybody come to one place for Thanksgiving, and next time they go to someplace else for Christmas, and they do the same thing for New Year, just trade back and forth. That's basically what they did. It was more of a family deal then.
How about were things like birthdays a special day?
Well, I think maybe for the senior members of the family, it was kind of a special day. They'd have all their brothers and sisters, but they were just the kids. Well, usually just the family deal at home.
Did you have birthday parties?
Birthday parties, candles.
Okay, getting back to the meals, when on holiday like Christmas and Thanksgiving, what kind of meals were fixed for that? Were they elaborate?
Well, I thought they were. But, you know, usually, well, for Thanksgiving and Christmas, you always had a great big turkey, and honest to gosh, they used to make dressing and hot rolls and things. You know, you can't hardly get them anymore like that. They just something else. Mm-hmm. But it was all the gravy, honest to gosh, you're making my mouth water.
Since there wasn't TV or radio or things like that, did you have any musical instruments or something like that in the home?
My family had a piano. My mother played the piano real well. She played like for the, well, my family was Mormon and LDS, and so she played for the Relief Society and the primary and all these things. And most, she tried to get all of us to learn, and a couple of the girls did learn how to do pretty well on the piano, but the boys never did do very much for them. They were always out playing baseball or something else, and they didn't like to do it. But and even in other families, well, something you hardly ever hear anymore, but Mark Springs used to be the center of the violins. There used to be some great violin players. Yeah, the Leniuses and the Wards. There was several families that just, you know, in the paper now you hear about a person named Silvermore, back to, I think, in Chicago, in the orchestra, playing violin. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody ever hears about anybody playing the violin now.
So did different families get together for musical things or anything like that? Or?
Yeah, they did. They'd get together for musical things, and a lot of times they get together for practicing, you know, and then they do something in church together or something like that.
Okay, and how about, religions?
Well, I think in those days, regardless of what you were, I'm sure there's exceptions to this, but I think everybody was more religious. You know, the church, because of, you know, there wasn't all those distractions then, and so the churches played a real important part in everything that happened, regardless of which one, whether you were a Catholic or a Protestant or LDS, whatever, right? Anyway, this played a very big part in the church. Now, they still do to some extent, but I'm sure the churches, as a general rule, have had a lowering of the number of people participating in everything they have to do. In fact, they have to work like the dickens to get people to join. Mm-hmm. And this didn't happen then, because everybody was really involved in the church and doing everything they, you know, they could or would. Just good to be together.
Did the churches have different standards then?
Well, yeah, I would think so. You know, it's a lot, it's a lot more permissive society today than it was then. You know, I bet if you talk to your dad or something, you know, what he thought was right and what you think is right now are probably two different things. And this is, you know, I think there's a general rule, morals were higher, and, you know, you just didn't have, divorce was almost, you know, if you were a divorced woman, you were just almost, it's just something terrible. You just didn't do it in those days.
What kind of standards were there that led up to marriage? I know they must have been a lot different than they are today.
Yeah. Well, there was more probably intermarriage right among the town because you didn't travel as much. You know, you didn't, there might be some intermarriage, say, between Rochester and Greenville, but you just didn't do it. But after World War II, everybody got away from their hometown, and everybody brought their girlfriend back. So like I brought Bev back from Oregon, and everybody, what it did it all over the world. You know, you had American soldiers marrying German girls and French girls and Japanese girls and Australian girls, but this also happened in the United States. It was an intermix of people that were just something else, due probably a little bit to World War I, but not. But in World War II, this really happened, because it was a longer war, and more people were involved, and they set up the training bases, and one thing or another, and all these contributed to getting everybody mixed up, all the United States. You're like throwing, I guess, a bunch of raisins in there, and you're going into a pan of wheat, trying to mix them up, because this is what really happened. It's just mixed all young people that went to war all over the United States.
How did parents feel about that? Did your parents like you marrying someone that wasn't from this area?
I don't think they ever told me.
Not that.
never said anything about it.
How old were you when you got married?
I was 25. Mm-hmm. But I'd gone to college and gone through OCS. And then I met Beth before I went overseas, but when I came back, I was 25, so I spent 3 years overseas. So that's why I was probably a little bit. Well, I think people married later than they do now. You know, everybody gets married at 20, 21, or something like that.
Yeah.
My dad didn't get married until he was 33. Mm-hmm. So I guess the thing just keeps going down. Mm-hmm.
What kind of effect did the war have on this area? I mean, what was the town like over there and stuff?
Well, you know, they had gas rations, and they have a little bit the same thing they have now. President Roosevelt put a speed limit, and he did it for the same reason they did now, and that was to conserve fuel. But he had a speed limit. You couldn't go over a certain speed in automobiles and like that. And everybody was involved in selling Liberty bonds and, World War I, of course, were more famous for Liberty bonds, but they still sell them bonds to help the war effort, and they're all involved with the darn old war thing, everybody. And then the paper, you pick up one of those papers back then during that time, all it was about people, where they were or what they're doing, and a lot of victories. There were a lot of people still.
Well, I was wondering, because I heard and read before that back east, like, patriotism was a lot more than like Wyoming. Strike or something. I'm just wondering how patriotism.
No, I don't really think that.
It was really a lot of patriotism.
Oh, I think. Yeah. Hmm. You take most of growing young men in every family in the war, and you're going to be patriotic because you want that boy to come back, the girl.
How about a lot of the young people that left and stuff? Did they stay away, or did a lot of people come back home?
Well, I'm sure it depends a little bit on the area they came from. Let me give you a good example. We used to be in the sheep business, and we had sheep herders that came up from New Mexico and Colorado, and in some cases, Old Mexico. But and what happened is that these people, as they grew up, they'd come up here and herd sheep and go back and get married and have children, but they'd still come back. They'd come up here and stay 6 months, 9 months, or a year, whatever. And they go back to their families and like that. After World War II, this whole source of sheep herders dried up. And the reason they dried up is that these young people, they had to go to war too, and they went out and they found out that they didn't have to be sheep herders. They could work in factories, or they could work. They were just as smart as anybody else. They didn't have to be sheep herders. And just them getting up and around got them so they didn't hurt sheep. And then because of that, we did have to go either to Spain and bring backs in, or to Mexico and bring in old Mexico people and like that. And this happened because the source of sheep herders had dried up.
Yeah. How about politics?
Well, a long time ago, and there's not too many people can remember, but it used to be Republican. But then when Roosevelt came in, and the coal mines became stronger, and John L. Lewis, who was head of the United Mine Workers, was very strong, and he was a good Democrat. And Sweetwater County became a very devout Democratic county. And there have only been, since about 1947, I think, there's only been about 4 Republicans elected to the state legislature, for sure. And I'm one of them. But Lyman Firm was one, elected senator, and there was one. John Lee was one, and I was one, and there was one, I think, elected in 47 years since they've had a person in the House representing when I was elected. So that's 47 years, 49 years ago now, when they elected that other one. And all the other ones have been Democrats in all those years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is not basically what's happening in Wyoming is traditionally a Republican state.
What kind of things did you have to do while you were elected to
be in the legislature?
Yeah, what kind of things did you deal with?
Well, the first thing that happens to you is that they assign you to a committee and they kind of ask you what you'd like to do. So I didn't want to go down there and just not do anything. You can give a little time away if you want.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked to be on the Judiciary Committee, which is probably not the smartest thing to do, but it's generally, a lot of lawyers get on there, but it's really a lot of work, and you had to read a lot, and then for me it was a little bit difficult because you have to be schooled a little bit in the way you read law books. Mm-hmm. That's what you're basically dealing with, and basically dealing with the law that concerns all the things that have to do with the judiciary part of it. That's a little bit different reading than reading a bill that has to do with something with almost anything, agriculture or business or anything else. So it's kind of hard for me to get on there, but it was a very interesting part of it. A lot of my time is spent either reading and studying, or you spend a lot of time in committee work, and then the rest of the time you're down on the floor, doing votes or roll calls and votes.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. One of these days, you'll try.
Okay, I'll get back to the businesses now. How do you think the steady increase in population and all that kind of stuff changed the businesses, or do you think it did?
Let me have to go back now. I told you that I was in Sheetman,
mm-hmm.
and Sweetwater County was one of the largest sheep and wool producing areas in all the United States. It was very, and one of the reasons was it's called the Rock Springs Grazing Association, but if you remember your history, the Union Pacific was given every other section on either side of the railroad, or 20 miles on either side of the railroad. So that means there was a stretch of 40 miles, and Union Pacific owned every other section. Well, what they did is they leased that ground for 40 miles wide and about 200 miles long for the Rock Springs Grazing Association. So then because of that, there were about 200,000 sheep, 200,000 head of sheep came down here in the wintertime and grazed in the wintertime. All right, so this was a very important business in here. Coal mining was very important. And at that time, oil and gas wasn't doing anything. And Mountain Fuel was in here, I think they came in the 30s. And they did a lot of drilling, but just basically drilling for gas, natural gas. And so In fact, in 1952, the coal mine shut down because what had happened, and the demands by the coal miners just become so great that it wasn't profitable for anybody to mine coal anymore, so they just shut the mines down. And this became a very bad thing that happened in Sweetwater County because there wasn't any. But about soon after that, though, Mountain View was drilling for natural gas out there west of Green River, and he ran onto this material, you know, it was called Trona. So what happened then is that, well, it was a number of years. Nobody had ever discovered it before. They didn't know how to process it. They didn't know what it was. So they must have, well, they did. They spent years trying to find out what it was and what it could be used for. When they finally got it down, it became soda ash, where they could break it down. And then that started a whole new industry in here. And then here in the last few years, and that's kind of stabilized, in the last few years, the coal business has come back, and the oil and gas have come back, you know, substantially now. So, and the reason, well, I have to tell you a little story about Rudy Anselmi, who was a Democratic state senator here for many years, but he was also on the school board with me, and he said, I've lived here all my life, and they said that there's a wealth of minerals here in Sweetwater County, and they keep saying it's just around the corner, but I've lived here all my life, and it's still not here yet. And this really was true. He finally went down, and when Governor Hersler was elected governor, and he became, well, he's on the Public Service Commission, I think now. And anyway, he had a grocery and grocery store and a clothing store. Well, it was called a Miner's Market. I don't know how to do that. And so what happened is Rock Springs was really in the dumps about 1952 when they started pulling themselves out and spawning up.
And so it's been kind of a boom and then decrease and
right.
Then boom again.
Yeah. And it looks good, you know. Good for right now, and it'll probably stay that way for a number of years, but I have to, because just in my lifetime is going up and down,
yeah.
And I'm sure it'll do it again.
Do you think the town is going to keep growing for a while longer?
Well, I think it is because of the demand for oil and gas and Trona, and it's just then this oil shale is going to play an important part because they're going to start more, you know, you read more and more about it all the time, and people are starting to really put some money into it, and when that happens, that means that we're right, you know, kind of on the northern edge of it, but between here and Craig, well, that's all it is oil
spill. Yeah. What was your reaction to, like, when all of the bad stuff started coming about Rock Springs? 60 Minutes got a hold of this stuff about K Street and all this. What kind of reaction did you have to that?
Well, there were so many things that really bothered me, you know. You know, I was born and raised here, and I just hate it. Rock Springs is a nice town, and a lot of nice people in Rock Springs. And the bad names that we were called and were given because of all these things, and I'm sure they were happening. To a certain extent, they happened in all of them. But they just happened to be magnified because we were a boom town. And it gets magnified here, and it's just almost dead. Pardon me.
Could you tell me how the customer relationship has changed with businesses, like working with customers now through the business, and how the relationship was back then and what was different?
Well, it's changed in this respect, I think. And most of the businesses in those days were all home-owned, and everybody knew everybody else, and it was a very personal sort of thing. A lot of it was charged with. A lot of it was those people that they had the Union Pacific Coal Company store down right close to where the Civic Center is, that big building there. That was the Union Pacific store. And they had one of these little stores in all of them, and never went to coal mining camp. And so a lot of the miners would go in there and charge their groceries, and probably most of the time probably wouldn't get very much of a check, because they just deducted from a check. But all the other people that had stores in town were all old timers that, you know, had been here and had charge accounts. Everybody knew everybody, there was, now, you know, it's all supermarkets and all, you know, when you really start, you go down and think about it, there are not too many, you know, stores that are owned by people that have been here a long time. You know, I mean, it's hard to think of anybody. All of them gone out of business, the stock growers and like that. And most of them are all now chain stores of one sort or another. Even the eating places are all, good many of them are all chain things, with fast food restaurants that have come in since the boom hit. Before, you didn't have that.
Speaking of restaurants, how were there restaurants then that people went out to eat at? Or?
Well, let's see. You know the Chinese restaurant down on K Street? It's called the New Grand.
Okay.
That restaurant is kind of the offspring of a restaurant that was right across the street from the railroad station. You know, just right across the corner there. And in its heyday, man, that used to be go out dancing. They used to have more parties, dancing parties like that. So then when you get to the band lit up, or they go down to Leo. I think Leo is still alive. He's a Chinese fellow that's about 90 years old. And I haven't been too long since I've seen him. But it's his family has this new grand campaign. There's always been a cafe. Oh, another one was a place called Howard's Cafe, which is right where City Market used to be. They used to have on the other side of the street, Safeway, they had a motel, and then on this side was a bar and a nice restaurant. And during the war years, this place was a really hip place to go.
Was it more like single people going in there to eat, or was it like, did families go out and eat a lot together?
Well, I don't, except for especially Cajun's family, there was, people dating her, or going to a dance, or something like that. It was, family generally, just didn't, in those days, made it home. They just, they didn't have that much money.
Can you tell me anything about the mines and the miners?
Well, I'm sure you can find somebody who knows a lot more about them than I do. I can't tell you too much about mining, and you can find, somebody who knows a lot more than I do. But one of the reasons that Rock Springs has so many different nationalities is I'm sure if you've ever been, in Europe or, places, the reason they came over here is they had real poverty conditions over there. And these people, they just had so many children, one thing or another, they just moved out, and a lot of them migrated first into Pennsylvania, West Virginia, where they had mines there, and then they migrated out here. And so I think at one time we must have had 52 different nationalities. People migrated, from Europe over here. The United States was trying to bring over because they wanted to build up the West or build up the United States. And that's, a lot of them came over here and didn't have nothing to do except, didn't have any brains, I'm not saying they were dumb, but they just had physical ability, and they come out and get in a coal mine. That's why we have so many different nationalities. They all migrated to Rock Springs in this area because the coal mining was here and they could get a job.
Was there conflicts between nationalities or anything like that then?
Well, I'm sure there was to some degree. The only big one, was, and this was, I guess the coal miners were trying to get organized, unionized. And so the coal owners brought in the Chinese people to work in the mines. And so what happened is that the coal miners decided they were just going to get rid of the Chinese, and that's when they had the Chinese riot. And that's when they brought the militia in here, and they had the barracks down there across from Washington. Well, they're still, they still had some of the Catholic stuff in there. Where the Catholic school is?
Mm-hmm.
That's part of them. And right across the way, where the Perry Center is, there was a whole block of, and that's where they housed the barracks. They called them the barracks. They housed the army that was sent here to quell the riots, Chinese riots.
What was happening in these riots?
Oh, they were killing them. But you know the Lincoln School? That's the New Lincoln School right now?
Uh-huh,
yeah. Okay, evidently right there is where a lot of these Chinese were holed up. Right? They were really living houses. You know, they were living in burrows down here, like, you know. And when they were in there digging, another one you might talk to about that is Mrs. McFadden, you know, at the library. Mm-hmm. And she was able to save a lot of these artifacts that came out of it. And I think she had some in the library. But anyway, they just killed these poor Chinese in the while they were down in the holes, you know. They were living in these darn little holes and had a little pot or something, you know, they cooked some on. But we got a few fragments out of some old Chinese basements and stuff. She got some real good stuff when they dug the basement to build that school.
Mm-hmm. Did that have any effect on the minorities that lived here? Did they still migrate in a lot, or did...
And after that?
Yeah.
No, I don't think it changed. You know, they still, after that was quelled, things were brought back to normal and they still came in.
Well, did they live interspersed with everyone, or did they kind of stick to their little groups and living together and stuff like this?
I would say it was kind of cliquish in a way, you know. I think religious people kind of came together, but, you know, one reason you have two Catholic churches, and this one over here is one on the north side Catholic church is basically Croatian, you know, and that one. The one on the other side is Irish and Italian, and that's even among religions it was kind of different, but the most on this side were the Slavs, and the ones on that side were the Irish and Italian and like that, you know, on the south side.
So this area kind of started out agriculture and animals and stuff like this then, right, with the sheep business?
Well, they had coal, you know, they knew the coal was there for a long, long time. But basically it was the sheep business that, mm-hmm. was a good area to raise sheep and animals and cattle. So. Mm-hmm. And there were sheep and cattle were very dominant thing in the economy of Rock Springs in the early days.
Well, could you tell a special effect that it had when it started turning more towards industry and stuff like this? I mean, where that was the main part of the area, the more industry than with
them? Well, the thing that happened was the demand just went by the wayside as far as the demand for wool and lambs. You know, you hardly ever see a wool suit anymore, and you hardly see anybody to eat lamb. And the demand for lamb and wool just went completely sour, and we were one of the first ones. We sold out in 1965, and we were one of the first ones. There were only half a dozen sheep out there, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just people just, one of those things, they just don't use lamb and wool anymore. There wasn't any demand, which is kind of a shame, because you know all this area is good. The raising meat then, it should be used for meat. The only people in the world are starving. If we could raise meat of some kind, but honestly, gosh, it's tough to be a rancher now, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I notice now, you know, like all of the trailers that are around and everything. Back then, what were the homes like? Was it mostly big houses and stuff like that, or were there?
No, the two best streets were D Street and Bridger Avenue. There were, when I was a kid, there wasn't any grass hardly at all, and there wasn't any trees, and most of them were just little tiny, all the way down number four were just little, that was all belonged to the coal companies, and they were little tiny, you know, little four room little quadrangles. I mean, they were little tiny. There were a couple of those buildings that are still there that are pretty big, and they were usually the foreman's houses. But all the others were, and they, a lot of them have been rebuilt and replaced. But they're just little tiny houses, like four little rooms, and I mean little. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd have a kitchen and maybe three bedrooms, or maybe a little dining room, two bedrooms. Mm-hmm. Mostly they were used for bedrooms. You know, they had big families and little houses, right? I mean, little tiny. Mm-hmm.
So they were kind of crowded then, with big families.
Oh, yeah.
Well, is there any little incidents or stories you can tell me that most people wouldn't know about that you might remember just from living here for so long?
Well, I guess I can tell you a lot of stories. I just can't think of it. Can you think of anything that of special interest to you? I mean, that you might think about.
How about parades and festivities for like 4th of July and Labor Day? Was there stuff like that then? Did they have parades that went down there?
Yeah, they had parades 4th of July. I'll tell you, another fellow you ought to talk to, I don't know whether maybe somebody in your class is going to do it, but you know any of you know Hank Chatty, who is a historian down in Greenville?
The name sounds really familiar. I think maybe I've talked to him before, but I don't know.
He's a real stocky guy, he's not as tall as I am, but he's probably 5'11", real stocky. Mm-hmm.
I think I have talked to him last year for another history project that I was doing.
But he knows a lot about the history of Rock Springs, and I'm sure he can tell you a lot more than I can, because he almost dedicated his life to it. But I'll tell you, there's a lady, well, my dad came in 1906, but he came out here because his sister was here. Anyway, we became acquainted with a lady named Mrs. Bates, and she remembers when she used to live down on the ranch down south of Green River, which is now Green River. And I've heard her talk about the Indians. The Indians, you know, before they were put on reservations, they would migrate from, like, up here in the Wind River. They'd migrate from right down the Green River, go on down, and they'd go down the Hot Country. They'd migrate back and forth in the spring and summer. Anyway, I've heard her talk about all these Indians, you know, they come by the ranch, they migrate, come by, and then come back in spring. And I've also heard her talk about, you know, this particular area, and all the way down to Browns Park, used to be a kind of a haven for the bad men, you know. Browns Park used to be especially bad. That's where they hole up, you know. And they'd come by, and she seemed to think they were nice guys, you know. They came in, and they'd probably robbed a bank or something, and they'd give her a big tip to feed them or something like that. But someday, if you get somebody down, you know, somebody down in Browns Park, and go down there, because there's a lot of history down there, and it's all kind of bad men, you know. Tom Horn and all these guys, and they'd come up here and rob the railroad or something, you know, and they'd head back down there, and nobody could get them out of there. Well, there's some books in the library. I bet they have some up there about the history of the Browns Park. You probably find that really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you have a closing statement you'd like to make, or anything?
Well, nice meeting you, and nice kind of talking about these things. Sometimes you have all these things, and nobody ever gets them down. I've been going to do this for years for people in the sheep business, my dad and some of their things down on tape, and I've never done it. And I should have done a long time ago.
Well, how do you feel about the way this place is now in comparison to how it was then?
Well, it's a, you know, even this business right here, it's a pretty hectic business. And, you know, it was so peaceful and quiet before, generally. The only thing you had to worry about was storms and like that, but it really is a lot more hectic now than it ever goes the same way. It's going to be really tough in years to come. I don't envy you people at all.
Well, thank you very much for this interview.